You're listening to the Creative Seat Podcast, where the curious and creative come to listen and be inspired. I'm Samantha K. Henderson, independent producer and your host. If you're interested in finding out more about me or our guests, visit the website at www.thecreativeseat.com. Thank you, Filmcraft Studio Gear, for sponsoring this episode. Visit their website, www.filmcraftla.com, and pick up a customizable studio director chair today. It's legit my favorite creative seat. Filmcraft does so many great things in the community, and I'm proud to be part of the Filmcraft LA family. On this episode of the Creative Seat Podcast, Annika Hyomo talks about transitioning into creative work and shares her personal experience with the audience. Let's get Annika in the creative seat and find out more about her and the exciting projects that she has in the works. All right, Annika, you're in the creative seat. Please tell us what you want us to know about you.
I'm a writer, director, and producer, wearing three hats, not all of them at once, though. I find that if I try to do everything all at once, that I go crazy because there's this internal conflict that happens when you're trying to produce at the same time as you write and direct. But that's what I do now. So basically, I'm a filmmaker and come at it from a long background, a kind of a crooked background, but very creative background. I've always been a writer. I've got a strong background as a musician as well. I'm classically trained as a vocalist. And so story in different forms has always been a part of my life, whether it's writing, it's trying to come up with performances or the singing part of it. I took a sort of a, I wouldn't call it a detour, but I'm also very academic. So I have a PhD in my background in communication, which people always used to ask me, what's that? And finally, I came up with storytelling because we're storytelling people. And really, communication is the study of how we tell those stories and how we share those stories with one another. So from there, I was teaching at Loyola Marymount University. So it wasn't really my cup of tea after a while. I needed to do something different. And I started to consult mostly in the entertainment industry. One day, I was looking at websites, just doing some general research, and I came across the American Film Institute. And thought, you know, the job that I was looking at wasn't really me because it was all analytics. And I was tired of crunching numbers all day long. I did not want to crunch numbers. You wouldn't want to talk to me when all I do is crunch numbers all day long. It just wasn't me. But I kept looking at it. And finally, I said, you know, I'll apply. And so I applied and I included some of my writing, which at that point was mostly academic research into movies. So I'd studied movies. I'd studied the influence and impact of movies. I included some of that in my job application and went up. I talked to them and it turned out to be a match made in heaven because I was able to translate analytics and numbers to an audience, a group of people who were very, very creative and who were not immersed in a world of numbers. But I was able to communicate the numbers to them and also able to communicate the world of creativity back to people who needed numbers at the other side. So I started as sort of a bridge there. And while I was there, word got out that I am also a screenwriter. And when people discovered that I'm a screenwriter, word got around very quickly around this group of people who are some of the most wonderful filmmakers that I know personally and professionally. And they wouldn't let me not write. Let's just put it that way. So they encouraged me to continue writing. And with their support, I ended up creating my first short film, Dr. Penelope, which is a story about a young woman who is struggling to finish her dissertation in psychology until she gets help from a puppet, a psychic puppet. And it was inspired by a number of things in my own life. And also, I had a friend up at AFI who was very much into puppets, and that came into it. And I had this other idea about doing something with marionettes and something more in the horror genre. But this is not horror, but it all just sort of came together in this project. And this story ended up being executive produced by Tom Rickman, who, amongst other accolades and luminary works that he has been a part of or created, I should say created. He was the screenwriter who wrote Coal Miner's Daughter many years ago. He's written Tuesdays with Maury and a number of other amazing, amazing projects. So Tom took on this project and helped me bring it to fruition. And along with so many other people up there, Patty Meyer, just any number of people that said, you know, you've got to make this film. And along the way, Donna Lustig was another one of my friends up there who said, you know, you've got to direct this as well. So it wasn't just that I ended up writing it, but it's like people started to push me to direct it. And I just had to trust my friends because I love their work. And if they were telling me that I could do it, I had to trust them. So I learned to build a muscle of trust and to grow as a filmmaker, as a storyteller, above all, while I was there. So eventually I ended up leaving AFI and then continued to do my own work as a story consultant and as a filmmaker to kind of fast forward to where I am now, where I am working on documentaries and narratives, scripted stories side by side.
Yeah. So you have a wonderful, rich history of work. And I think it ties in really well to the theme of this show, which is transition, specifically transitioning from one type of creative work, including analytics, because that does take a certain degree of creativity and thinking outside the box sometimes, to your filmmaking and beyond just the transition. Like you mentioned the word trust, which I think is another one of those key words in this creative field, because there's a lot of trust involved in what we do. We have to trust in ourselves, but you're also having to trust the people that you work with. And so we'll get a chance a little later to talk about collaborators. But before we do that, I like for you just to talk about your experience in the transition. So you know, in your introduction, you talked about the different things that you did, but maybe if we could go a little bit deeper into the process and like the thought process. So we know like action, obviously, has to happen, like you're taking the steps, but like what is the thought process and what is the work that you have to do to move from like one position to another or from one role to another?
That's a really good question. I think, first of all, I think it's one of those things. Remember, this is both easier than you think and harder than you think. It's easy in the sense that all it takes is one step and then one step. And then one step. It takes time. And I know that from my academic research as well, that it doesn't happen overnight. It takes years to make a transition, even with a lot of hard work behind it, even if you've had a quote-unquote hobby before, even if you've had creative trajectories, if you're taking a transition from one thing to another, it takes a long time. And so you have to be very patient, but it takes one step and one step and one step. It takes having a focused target that this is what I'm getting to. And so the more focused you can be all along the way, the more likely you are to reach that target. Now, that being said, I don't know that, at least for me, that it was always so evident exactly where I was going to go, what the next step was going to be. It was more like the signs would show up along the way. When I found that job up at AFI, that was my big sign to say, come here, work at AFI, get to know people. This is your world. But I could just as easily have not taken that opportunity. I could just as easily have said, you know what, it's a job about analytics. This is absolutely not me. I'm going to ignore it. So I think, and literally, I mean, that was the only project that I saw at that time. I had a bit of a slump at the time too. And it was the only project that came my way that looked like it fit me in any way. So sometimes it is really just taking a look at, from almost a spiritual sense, what are the signs around me, and to the wherewithal or courage or whatever it is to say, I'm going to reach for this opportunity. I'm going
to take it. It's right in front of me. And I am going to let go of everything else and just trust. I think trust, like you said, is a really big component of this, is that if I do, then I can trust and I'm going to go. I also think that the whole idea of education is critical, that it's an ongoing education. I learned so much when I was up at AFI. I worked at the AFI Conservatory, which is a film school and one of the top film schools in the world. And so I had the opportunity to be around people who were educators and learn from those people, learn from mentors and seek out mentors who were willing and wanted to help me, and then to accept that help and trust that they would help me, trust the process. And that's harder than you think sometimes. Well, I think we all know, right? When you're in the middle of it, you start to question, oh my gosh, what am I doing, right? I'm crazy. I could be getting this really big job with so many figures and zeros and everything after it, or I could be living this kind of life and that kind of life. And you have to be willing to make some choices along the way. And those choices can be tough and not always popular with other people because you're doing something different. That's uncomfortable for other people, right? And can be uncomfortable for you. And I call those choices rather than sacrifices. But along the way, there are losses because there are people that you start the journey with that you won't be finishing the journey with. There are people that have been part of your life before that may not be part of your life in the future, or they may come back in some form. And you don't always see that while you're on this journey of transition. So I think for me, at least, that's been a big part of my experience and something that has been a part of other transitions before as well in life. It's something that I kind of grew up with, transitions. I didn't mention this, but I grew up as an expatriate child in many ways. I come from Sweden originally. We lived in a bunch of countries. And so there was a lot of transitioning that I grew up with, which perhaps made it easier for me at this point to transition. But I feel like that just taking those steps and reaching out, trusting that you're doing the right thing. Obviously, make sure that, or maybe not so obviously, but make sure that you do have some way of paying your bills while you're doing this. But at the same time, that you're prepared that you're not going to have everything that you might have had if you had a six-figure corporate job, for example, whatever it might be. I think that's really important. And it's also, you know, you wanted to ask about collaborators down the line too, but I think it's seeking out other people who you can collaborate with, to work with, and people who challenge you to grow and to take that next step and become the best that you can be in whatever form of art it is that you want to be working on. And I think the last thing that I'll say about transitioning too, as I mentioned previously, that I did start out as a classical singer. And I think that it's important to be realistic about what you can and cannot do and transition. If we're talking about it as a career, I would not be able to transition into a career as a classical singer after a certain point in life. Now, I didn't end up pursuing that career fully in my 20s. And I certainly would not have been able to transition into it in my 30s or 40s. It's too late. It's just not going to happen. And the same thing for somebody who's a dancer, for example. If you're in your 40s, you're probably not going to be a prima ballerina, right? But you might really enjoy dance. And I think it's important to look at what it is that you want to spend time on creatively. There are certain things that you can continue to pursue because you really enjoy it. As a career, there are certain careers that are easier to transition into no matter where you are in life or as far as how old you are. And that doesn't have, I mean, that reality is separate from ageism and other things that you might come across. But I think it's important to be realistic too about what you might or might not be able to transition into and achieve given where you are.
No, that's great for the audience, especially those of us that are in process of transitioning or maybe just even exploring. The takeaways are A, be able to support yourself. You know, there are people that have been wildly successful by dropping their, you know, primary means of support, and they go on to do wonderful things. And that's great for them. I think for most of us, though, we have to be realistic and reasonable. And so you definitely, maybe you don't do the full 9-to-5 job, but you find some way to support your basic needs at minimum. And then the other main takeaway is being realistic about what it is that you can do. So I'm a firm believer in I could do whatever I want. And that's probably true. But you also have to like make decisions about what you're going to do. And your reason behind it should make sense for you as a person, for you as a creative, for you as a professional. And so, you know, I definitely want to encourage people to go for it. That's what this podcast is about. But, you know, let's do it the adult way. Right.
So I love that. Yeah, we'll do it the I love adult that. You way. Know, it's hard to be creative if you're hungry. I mean, you should be a little bit hungry, you know, if you get what I mean. But it's like if you're worrying about how you're going to pay your rent and you're worrying about how you're going to pay for your healthcare or whatever it might be, you're probably not going to be at the top of your game.
Right.
You know, I think it's really important to take care of yourself and to have somewhat of a foundation. Now, you might not be living in a mansion, but take care of yourself.
Right. That's good advice. So, Annika, I definitely want to give you a chance to talk about your current projects. I know you got a lot going on. So let's pick like your top two.
Top two. Okay, so let me just preface this with I'm in the process of establishing a production company with a colleague of mine. And so that's why we do have a lot of projects going on in various stages of development. But the two that I'm working on right now, I'm working on a documentary and I'm working on a short film. And they're different and feed different parts of me. So the documentary is about the last woman to be exonerated, that is cleared of her conviction as a witch during the Salem witch trials. And this exoneration came last year after 329 years. So 330 years, if we want to round it out. And it came because a middle school teacher and her students worked hard on a class project to learn about civics, but by clearing her name. And it's a story that has a lot of implications and ramifications in various aspects of society today. We can go into. And then, so that's a feature. It's going to be about an hour and 45 minutes, I think, when we're done with it. We're in production and we've finished two rounds of filming in Massachusetts so far. We're going to film a reenactment and do some more interviews before we're done. But we're working really hard to get a release next year is the intent. And then my other project I'm really excited about, it's a story about a nurse and a former racehorse where the nurse is burnt out from her work in the ICU and needs to transition into a different career, as does the former racehorse who had a wonderful career as an athlete on the track and now needs to have a different career for himself. And the two of them come together through healing and overcoming PTSD to become equine therapists together. That is therapy with the assistance of horses. And I'm very proud of that project as a short film that I wrote during the pandemic, started to develop during the pandemic when I had writer's block more or less on some other projects and needed something to get me through. At the same time as I was myself going up to my friend's ranch and getting to know a horse called Eddie, hence Eddie's Turn, and finding a lot of healing through that process myself during a time that was challenging for me as it was for many other people. So these are both stories about healing. They're about coming together, community, and supporting one another. And about transitions in many ways, going from whether it's a sort of a coming of age story, which I think applies to various stages in life that we can have that coming of age. But it's also it's finding new purpose when one purpose doesn't exist anymore for whatever the reason, we find something different.
and in the power that we have to create transitions as well as individuals or as groups that can have not just personal impact, but also societal impact locally, globally, and so on. So I'm very proud of both of these projects.
Right. And I'm excited for you. I've been around, you know, for some of the process. So I see the progress and definitely looking forward to the time when we get to watch the films and celebrate the completion of them. And I'll share your social media profile so like the audience here can follow you on the journey as well and support you. But it also leads me to this question of when you have these really great ideas and I'm going to say super huge projects that you're working on at the same time, what do you do to just stay committed and passionate and focused to get to the end, to complete the projects, to complete these films? Because I'm sure there's someone out there that needs to hear it, and I'm one of them. What do you do?
Sometimes what happens is that a story grabs you, holds on to you, and won't let go. And again, there's something spiritual. There's a spiritual magic in there. And both of these projects are projects like that. What happens is initially there's an uphill battle and you go, oh, this is never going to happen. Why am I going to do this? And even in working to workshop these projects, you know, it's, you get comments and notes and feedback from people. And it takes a long time. Workshopping is a good place to start, but it's not the full way. And during the process, there are so many ups and downs that you go through. And finances is a big one. And like you said, these are not small projects. And they have budgets that are worthy, the projects, in order to do them right and to do them well. And when you're in the middle of that fundraising, you go, oh my gosh, what am I doing? I could be working that six-figure job someplace. And why am I doing this? I think you have to, one thing that I keep telling myself, reminding myself, is that there are some stories no one else can tell except you. And somehow this inspiration that came to you, again, however you want to put it, some people say universe, some people say God, some people say it's just you, whatever you want to say, but this is your story to tell. And the only one that can tell it is you or me or whomever it is. And there's a kind of responsibility that goes with that. So maybe I tend to put a lot of pressure on myself, I think, without even thinking about it. And that is one driving force. It's also that I do tend to talk about my projects and people ask me questions about them. People who I work with professionally, people I don't work with professionally, and gives me joy and support to push forward when people are asking me, how's that going? And how's this going? And all that. So that there's always some kind of momentum with these projects. There comes a point where, again, the collaborators are really, really important, because the decision to go ahead and make these projects, to not just have a script or a treatment or whatever it is in a drawer or a list of questions to ask, but to actually make the project, that's often a collaborative decision. It's not just my decision. It's my decision together with producers. It's my decision together with other people and listening to other people to say and hear what they're saying. Is this a great idea? You know, to go through the same kinds of things that a studio assistant would go through, right? Is this a fresh idea? Has this been done before? Is there an audience for this? And to really go through all of these and then go through, very, very importantly, is the story there? What is the story that we're working on? And that's been critical for both of these projects, as it is with other projects as well. Documentaries are in some ways different because we piece them together at the very end. So there's this initial momentum to say, well, we got to get the footage. But there has to be a sense of what the story is that's going to be driving it. What is the story that we're going to tell with this? And the same thing with a narrative short that as I write, I always want to write features, but I wanted to make a short for reasons that we can get into. But making sure that this holds up, there's a beginning and middle and an end. That's just the basics. But then do we have all the components that make a strong story before we're going out and we're spending tens of thousands of dollars to make this? So that becomes a driver as well. Does this hold up? Can I do it? What's the story that I want to tell and that I'm the one to tell? So all of those things drive me. But there's also, you know, there's a pure joy that comes from doing this work, to be honest. It's like, it's very addictive.
I understand that.
Right? Right? It's like, I'm working with such incredible, amazing people. And in those long periods when it's a development period and I'm sitting there with my script, my story, and I'm going, what does this character want? You know, what's the story here? It's like, I have to remind myself of those moments when I also get to work with some of the most talented people in the world. The joy that I get from collaborating with people who feed my soul and nurture the story until we have something amazing. So that becomes like a carrot that I'm always driven by. It's like, I get to work with so-and-so and so-and-so and so. I get to work with Sam, you know, it's like, right? You know, there's joy in that. There's real joy in that. And that's what keeps me going.
No, I get it. You know, your collaborators are a big part of the success. The structure and the process that we have and we go through as creatives, whether it's from the beginning or somewhere down the line when we're, you know, simply just trying to get our work out to the public. So I would like to just touch on that a little bit. Like, what is your process of finding collaborators?
Finding collaborators it's really interesting. It sort of starts with people that I have something in common with that I enjoy being with is a big part of the process for me, because we're going to be working closely together very intensely for months and sometimes years. And so it's almost, it's like, it's finding a family of sorts, you know, like, and you know that you're going to have differences of opinion and all that, but who do I want to hang out with? I mean, that's a really big part of it. So some of that's just having coffees with people. It's meeting people at events and going, let's have a coffee and let's talk, because there's something about getting to know someone offset as well as onset. So that's one really big important component too. Sometimes it's referrals, but I still want to talk to the people who have those in-depth conversations with them. You know, we're talking about creativity and transitions and such in various creative fields, but I don't think it's that different from other places either, because you end up finding like-minded people that you work with, people who have the same kinds of sensibilities, same kinds of things that you enjoy working on. And so it ends up being that I find them within my communities. But something that everyone has in common that I end up working with, or that I really look for, a good sense of story. It comes before anything technical, anything else. You can be adept technically. You can have used certain techniques, technologies more than others. You know, you might be whatever. But can you talk story? That's my number one criteria with all of this. Can we really sit down and go through a story, understand it so that we're all sharing in what the story is, that we can contribute something to the conversation, shape it so that it becomes something that's really compelling. So having a good sense of story is those two, I'd say. Are you somebody that I enjoy being with? Are you somebody that we can talk story together? Those are my two big criteria. So where I find people right now, I've pretty much gone on a full circle, because a lot of the people that I'm working with right now come out of the American Film Institute, because that's my network. I know those people. And so we end up connecting with each other. I also, like, as you know, Sam, I've worked on with women in media. And so it may be that there are some people that I've found through that network as well. But again, it's story first. Finding collaborators, people that I really enjoy working with, and we like the same kinds of stuff.
No, that's great.
And coffee.
Yeah, I love coffee. I'm going to throw in a story, okay, Annika? And then you could tell me if I could keep the story.
Okay.
So here's a personal touchy ice. So Annika and I were working on a film that was being executive produced by Women in Media a few years back. And I was a producer, also acting as line producer and whatever else was needed on set. And so I distinctly remember looking up from my desk one day and turning to my left, and Annika was staring me down. And she says, "Fresh coffee?" And then I realized, like, hey, these people are not going to keep working without the coffee. So what do you do in that situation? You grab a PA. So we had this wonderful PA who I called into the office. I'm like, hey, we got to get some coffee ASAP. I've already ordered it from Starbucks. Can you go grab it? And he did. And he saved the day. Believe Annika when she says the coffee's important.
That story, it's a true story. So I just wanted to validate that story as being a true story first. And it comes from my own experience that if the coffee isn't there, camera isn't working. And this is really important because if camera isn't working, we're not going to have a movie. It just goes without saying. Usually the coffee cups just stand there and they're cold, but camera doesn't work without coffee. One of my recent projects that I was working on when we were filming The Last Witch, the documentary, recently, we were up in Massachusetts and it became almost like a standing thing there as well. We had a very small crew, a very tight crew. And we didn't have a PA necessarily in the morning, but we had to have our coffee. And usually what would happen is that our cinematographer, Peter Sickhart, who films, his usual gig is The Amazing Race. So we usually joke about, where's Peter right now? He's someplace, it's either Antarctica or Alaska, someplace in the world. But he would be the first one out and he would be getting coffee for everybody else because camera does not work without coffee. But there is something else to this that is really important when it comes to this transition that we're talking about. And that's understanding the culture that you're walking into. Like the workplace culture that you're walking into, like the importance of having certain things on set that might seem trivial to other people, but actually are part of the system to keep the system well-oiled and well-running. And as much as we joke about the coffee is part of that cultural system. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah,
as well.
And I think I'm going to take this opportunity to market some fresh coffee t-shirts. So you'll look for that on the website. Thank you, Annika. All right. So we're gonna wrap up soon. This has been a wonderful conversation. I always love speaking with you and working with you. Want to give you the opportunity. Oh, how sweet. Thank you. If you don't notice, people, like, I always go to my friends for help to support me in my endeavors. And so this is really an honor for me to have Annika here because she's really busy, as you've heard. And so thank you for that. But before we go, I want to give you the opportunity to just give any last words or pieces of advice. You've dropped a lot of knowledge on us tonight, but just, is there any like last thing you want to say to our audience?
So as far as transitions, I think really focusing on this from the perspective of transitions, if you feel like you are yearning to make a transition into a creative career like this, do it, because you probably are only going to get one chance to make that transition. You're probably not going to get a lot of those chances. And when you have that opportunity, you create that opportunity for you. It's like there's an opening and then you create it and you continue that journey. But you don't want to find yourself like 10, 15, 20 years down the line and go, I could have, would have, should have. It's, you get one opportunity. And if you find that this is who you really are, heart, mind, body, soul, as a creative, then really, really go for it. I would also say that whatever that path is for you, is yours alone. So even as much as we're talking about collaboration and working with other people, there's a path that's yours and it's not going to look like everybody else's. And you get to create it as you want it to be. So there are some people who really thrive on working in Hollywood where I'm working and it is literally, it's nonstop today. I started meetings today at 9 and I've had meetings throughout the day. I'm Zoom and phone calls and God knows what. And a lot of it is that, even in the creative industry and not much time for myself, but I love it. I love the people that I'm working with. If you're somebody that doesn't thrive in that intense of an environment. And the same thing, by the way, when we're on set, we start early in the morning. We might have a 5 o'clock call time and then we've got a 12-hour day ahead of us. It's a lot of work. If you find that you want to do something creative and you're drawn toward anything, whether it's making film stories, you know, visual stories, or it's something else, but you don't want the intensity that I'm in, there might be a different path for you where you're still doing the same thing. It just looks different. And it is equally and just as valuable as what I'm doing, what Sam's doing, or anybody else is doing. So don't think that there is only one path out there. There are many, many paths to get to happiness and being creative in that process.
I appreciate that. It's something that I'm a firm believer in. It's like, do you. But do something, like be creative. And I definitely am that person. Like I'll dive head first, even when there's concrete instead of water. But at least I could say I tried.
I know.
Yeah. So let's close out the show. Anika, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for being here. I will be sharing your socials on our platforms to make sure our audience can follow you. So you got to give us updates as you get closer to the end of your projects and let us know when you got news, you know, projects that are in the works or happening so we can support those as well. And thank you again.
Thank you for having me. This was fun.
Yeah, it was fun. We'll do it again.
And I love seeing you again.
Yeah, it's always great seeing you. So we're going to say goodnight to everybody and thank you again and best of luck to you.
Thank you. You too.
Creativity. It's like learning to ride a bicycle. You get on it, you fall a few times, then one day you're riding along with all the confidence, then you decide to learn a new trick. Make sure to like the episode and leave a review. Shout out to Dub Poet Production for the music. Samantha K. Henderson signing off. Go do something creative.